we're in Psalms 10. Psalm 10. Got two or three verses into this chapter last time. Let me pick back up at the start just for context's sake. Much of this passage is about the Antichrist, prophetically, individually. The references to the wicked are often corporate references, but they also refer to the wicked, as in the capital W, wicked, from 2 Thessalonians 2. But why standest thou afar off, O Lord? Why hidest thou thyself in times of trouble? That's, again, prophetic for the time when of Jacob's trouble, when the Lord stands off from Israel, lets them go through a terrible time and tribulation. In a way, he's hiding his face from them now. He showed them his face in the flesh of Jesus Christ, and they smacked that face till it was bloody and bruised and broken and swollen, so that his visage was so marred more than any man. And so the response has been that he has hidden his face from Israel. Verse 2, the wicked in his pride doth persecute the poor. We'll say more about that pride in a second. Let them be taken in the devices that they have imagined. For the wicked boasteth of his heart's desire. I think we closed last time talking about that boasting, the big mouth of the wicked. And where, I mean, first of all, the devil is a big talker. You find that from Isaiah 14, but it also happens that his children are big talkers too, just like his children are liars and murderers, amen? And so that's why you have so much of that going on in the world, is because those are the devil's children, and he inspires them. He's blinded their minds. He's affected their passions and their emotions. Verse 3, for the wicked boasteth of his heart's desire, and blesseth the covetous whom the Lord abhorreth. And I'm not going to go back through the Lord's abhorrence and hatred. We did that back from Psalm 5. So I'm not going to go back through all that again. But verse 4 says, the wicked, through the pride of his countenance, will not seek after God. God is not in all his thoughts. And that's the second time in the passage. We didn't say much about it the first time through. But the wicked, through the pride of his countenance, the wicked are proud. The wicked one is proud. But the wicked people are proud. That's a thing in our nature that we have to fight. There's a lot to be said about pride, of course, in the Bible. I was reminded that there was a time that I thought that there was one positive reference to pride in the Word of God. Look in Psalm 31, Psalm 31, 23. It could still be that way, but I'm inclined to think not. Every other reference to pride and the proud, or proudly in the Bible, is all a very negative connotation. Now, I had, in reading the Bible, found this verse, and you maybe have seen it as well, and I used to say, well, there's one place in the Bible that seems to infer that pride can be good. Obviously not the way folks use it today. I was never confused about that. But look in Psalm 31, 23, and then I'll tell you where I've come to. It says in verse 22, for I said in my haste, I am cut off from before thine eyes. Nevertheless, thou heardest the voice of my supplications when I cried unto thee. Obviously, David crying to God. O love the Lord, all ye his saints. For the Lord preserveth the faithful and plentifully rewardeth the proud doer. It's kind of a context that has a positivity about it. I mean, he's talking about the faithful and he plentifully rewardeth. It goes on in verse 24, be of good courage, he shall strengthen your heart, all ye that hope in the Lord. So I used to look at that and think, okay, well, there's one reference to pride that can be positive, but I've kind of changed my mind for the simple respect that every other reference about pride and proud in the Bible is all bad. So I read this way. O love the Lord, all ye his saints, for the Lord preserveth the faithful and plentifully rewardeth in the negative the proud doer. It's not talking about somebody having pride, righteous pride in doing right for God. That's not pride. And the Bible never speaks of it as proud or pride, something like that. It's always negative. So I think he's just saying the proud are going to get theirs, in spite of the context of some other things around about it being a kind of a positive light. I still think it's talking about a negative pride. So if you disagree, that's just fine. Just thought I'd let you know. Anyway, back to the pride of Psalm 10. Psalm 10:4 says, the wicked through the pride of his countenance will not seek after God. The pride of his countenance. You know, let's just run the reference. Look in 1 John. You can probably cite the verse. Pride is one of those core sins that seems to run everything, and there are several places like that. But 1 John chapter 2, of course, is the classic verse which most of us probably have memorized, where it says there are three things, three issues in this world. For all that is, and so it says, love not the world, verse 15, nor neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. If you love the world, you can't love God at the same time. Not really. Can't serve God and mammon, you can't love God in the world. Right? Verse 16, for all that is in the world, then it tells you those three things, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life is not of the Father, but is of the world. So lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, the pride of life. I know you've seen this before, likely, in all likelihood, but go back to Genesis 3 and reflect on Eve's temptation. Genesis chapter 3, this would, again, strongly indicate that the devil really doesn't use that much new material. The same, look, if worms catch fish every time you pitch it in the hole, there's no reason to change bait, right? Right, Brother Todd? There's no reason to change bait. Well, why would the devil change tactics if what he's doing is working every time? So, you have the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life. Genesis chapter 3. Notice the temptation, verse 6. When the woman saw that the tree was good for food, okay, food feeds the flesh, lust of the flesh, that it was pleasant to the eyes, lust of the eyes, and a tree to be desired to make one wise, would match the pride of life. So there you suddenly have everything else fitting and a little bit of depth, because you have a pride then connected with wisdom, which, now that you think about it, kind of makes sense, don't it? I mean, you never met a haughtier, more prideful, more condescending crew than somebody that's well-educated and thinks that they are the cat's meow. Stephen Hawking was a condescending little twerp. And Richard Dawkins and all the rest of those guys that think they're smarter than God, they all do that. That's why college campuses are always so hard. And they are. They're just, I mean, anytime, anywhere you find a college town, a college in a town, that town is going to be left-leaning, progressive, socially, and just as hard as a rock when it comes to spiritual matters. Do you know why? Because they teach the world's wisdom there. And because wisdom is a bed for pride. It's just the way things are. Now, lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, pride of life. There's one other spot I want to show you. In that regard, look in Matthew 4. And I know you, again, you probably know this, the Mount of Temptation. Jesus Christ tempted 40 days, 40 nights, followed by the Super Bowl, right? It said, verse 4:3, Matthew, then the tempter came to him, said, if thou be the Son of God, command these stones to be made bread. Why? Because he's hungry. Lust of the flesh. The tree was good for food. So here's the appeal. I mean, he takes that appeal to every man and every woman. And then, I mean, he takes that appeal to Jesus Christ, to appeal to the flesh. And then, of course, the Lord answers with Scripture. Then verse 5, no, let's skip on down right now to verse 8. Again, the devil taketh him up into an exceeding high mountain, showeth him all the kingdoms of the world and the glory of them. Luke says he showed them to him in a moment of time. What did he show him? He let him see something. That's the lust of the eyes. So the stones are the lust of the flesh. You can turn these to bread if you want, if you're really hungry enough. And then shows them the kingdoms, and they glittered and had an aura about them and glowed, you know, and so they were very appealing like the world is. Lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes. And then it's the second temptation in this passage. It says down in verse 6, if thou be the Son of God, cast thyself down, for it is written, he shall give his angels a charge concerning thee, and in their hands they shall bear thee up, lest at any time thou dash thy foot against a stone. It's the pride of life. That's a man taken into his own hands, his destiny. And in this case, it would have been presuming and assuming that God would step in and stop him from being killed. And maybe that was the case. But it's a man taking his own life into his own hands, and he's happy to build it. He's happy to lose it. You know, it's pride. It's pride. Lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, pride of life. Everything seems to branch off from there. Everything that's wrong in this world is covered in 1 John 2:16. Lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, pride of life. The devil's the god of this world. He has always dealt with men that way. He even tried dealing with Jesus Christ that way. And if you fall, you're going to fall because of the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, or the pride of life. Back to chapter 10. Back to chapter 10, I would remind you about, since we did that, again, the devil, one of his earmarks is pride. Look in Job. Look in Job 41. So where you find proud men, condescending, haughty men, whether it be due to athletic prowess or intelligence or accomplishment or riches or success, the devil's the author of that thing. Look in Job 41, and I'm sure you know that the devil was a murderer from the beginning, boded not in the truth. He's a liar, the father of it, so on and so forth. Job 41:15. He's also very proud. It says in 41:15. Now this is Leviathan. You can read the old passage. I don't think I have to go through and prove to you that Leviathan is the devil. His scales are his pride, shut up together as with a close seal. You find his kneesings in verse 18. He sneezes and fire comes out of his nostrils. Verse 21, his breath kindleth coals. That's the devil. It's a dragon. Verse 24, his heart is as firm as a stone, yea, as hard as a piece of the nether millstone. I mean, he's as hard as a rock. He's a hard being. Look down in verse 33, upon earth there is not his like who's made without fear. The devil's not scared of nothing. He's not even scared of God. Verse 34, he beholdeth all high things. He is a king over all the children of pride. And so you have the wicked. And I know it doesn't have a capital W there, but it could be that capital W wicked of 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, the Antichrist. But the wicked, through the pride of his countenance, will not seek after God. Now, the devil doesn't, the Antichrist won't, but neither do the wicked corporately either. Generally speaking, they do not seek after God because of why? It's always pride. Now, it may be sin, that's true. Their sin may affect their thoughts. Their sins may have made them haughty. The fact that they haven't been punished for their sins may convince them that God is dead, or there is no God, or there is no judgment, so they're proud. Or else, I mean, they may have been hit hard and judged by God and refused to bow their neck, and so they're just proud and hard. And that's the way the devil is, but that's how people are. And so if you want to know why it's possible to spend a lot of time, and we do, you know, beating our heads against the wall, trying to soften up sinners' hearts so they'll come to Christ, it always takes something cooperative. It's going to take a broken marriage or children astray or a bankruptcy or health issues or something to help break them, usually. But that's why we put the Word of God out, because people are proud. Look at this issue of they will not seek after God. We now live in a day where fewer and fewer people go to church. And I think if the churches that where they do go to church, if they decided they weren't going to just make it a flesh circus, a carnival, I think that the number of the percentage of people that went to church in the United States of America would drop down like some of those places in Europe. You know, 10%, 15% max. Because right now you can go to church and have your flesh fed just like you do at the theater. But if you, you know, try to feed them something else, they don't want it. Why? Because of pride. I mean, what keeps you from admitting you're wrong? Pride. I mean, go to some place where somebody's going to tell you that the way you think, the way you are, the way you're raising your kids, the way you look, the way you act is wrong. Well, nuh-uh. What's that? That's pride. It's pride. It's you can't get away from it. Look, if you will, in Proverbs chapter 18. We probably covered this recently. I can't remember. Proverbs 18. It says, The proud are the wicked through the pride of his countenance will not seek after God. They just won't seek God. Seek ye the Lord while he may be found. Call ye upon him while he's near. And they're not interested in seeking. We go down, pass out tracts to kids on the college campus. They're seeking something, but it's not God. Some, of course, do, and you can't always tell what they're doing. But as far as a corporate body, they're not spending, you know, $100,000 a year to go seek God. They're seeking something else. Look in Proverbs chapter 18, and notice verse 2, and this is what everybody's about today. A fool hath no delight in understanding, but that his heart may discover itself. How many times have you heard somebody, some kid say he's going to college on a mission of self-discovery, spending his daddy's money at about $100,000 a year to do it, right? It's self-discovery. Yeah, that's what they're there for. They want to find themselves, right? I listened to that all the time that I was in college in the late 70s and early 80s. And that was about a billion years ago, I know. Anyway, Proverbs chapter 14. Proverbs 14. The Bible just takes a man with bad motives and just rips him apart. He just lays him open one cut at a time. Proverbs 14. The backslider in heart shall be filled with his own ways. All he can think about is himself. All he contemplates is himself. Look in Proverbs 21. In the end, what that is pride. The narcissism, the self-interest, the self-consumption is pride. If it wasn't pride, you would realize that it's not all about you, and you'd go serve somebody else, including God. But you think it is all about you. I mean, you want to be a God. We have a God complex. We want to be the center of attention. That's what Facebook's all about. That's what social media plays on, is, yeah, you put some stupid thing on YouTube and you think you're going to be a star because you got 78 people that went. Like that counts for anything, right?
I have 1,500 friends.
Yeah, we'll see how they stick by you when you get sick. Amen. But anyway, Proverbs 21 and verse 2, every way of a man is right in his own eyes. This is self-consumption. And the pride, that the proud are that way. You know, there was a day when men knew. Now, I'm saying that they thought that, say, pride of country or pride of patriotism or something like that, pride in a championship, pride in something accomplished was, you know, worthwhile, and it never was. But now, I mean, there was a day when decent men that were lost would have been ashamed to be considered proud of some of the things that people are proud of today. And to be as, I mean, the World War II generation, which came back from the war and were lost, were not as self-centered as the modern generation. Something is dreadfully wrong. And so I'm saying that even men that were lost used to have an understanding that the narcissism, the self-obsession, was something that was deplorable. It was a vice. And so they were urged to go get off their cans and go make a living, learn a trade, do something productive with your life. Quit sitting around on your can feeling sorry for yourself. And now sitting around on your can feeling sorry for yourself is an honored thing. You can make a living doing that. You can get welfare doing that. Especially if you have the right colored skin and the right diagnosis. And it boils down to pride. It's still pride. It's sin. I forgot where I was going now. But back to Psalm 10. Psalm 10 and verse 4. The wicked, through the pride of his countenance, will not seek after God. I've just tried to, I think I have, I don't recall that I've messed up recently, expunge using the word pride as a positive, as a noun or a verb. Well, I'm proud of this. I grew up listening to that. You know, people don't even think what they're saying. Well, I'm mighty proud to have, you know, won the beer drinking contest. Mighty proud. Makes me want to cry. That kind of stuff. And it's just nonsense. And so you try to expunge that sort of stuff because God hates pride. I don't believe there's a single positive reference to pride in the Bible, in spite of the one we talked about earlier. Anyway, verse 4, the wicked through the pride of his countenance will not seek after God. God is not in all his thoughts. Double meaning. God is not something that the proud think about much. They've tried to expunge him from their thoughts because, I mean, to think of somebody that's holy and righteous and a judge is not something the proud want to think of. So in that way, God is not in all his thoughts. And God also doesn't control his thoughts. It's a double entendre, double meaning. God is not in all his thoughts. He doesn't think about God. On the other hand, God doesn't lead him anywhere in his thoughts. Because the natural man receiveth not the things of the Spirit of God. And so the guy is in darkness. If he does come into contact with something spiritual, unless he's under conviction about his sins, unless he's willing to deal with his sins, he doesn't even get any light. It's just darkness. It's just blackness. So God is not in all his thoughts that way too. Verse 5, his ways are always grievous. Grievous to who? Grievous to God. And probably in all honesty, grievous to himself. I know when I wasn't living right, I was a grief to me. It's a burden to everybody else. I mean, you let a guy get far enough down the road with drunkenness or drugs or pornography or gambling, he's a burden and a grief to everybody that deals with him. Except for the guy selling him the liquor. But, I mean, it's just a grief to everybody around. Mama, Papa, lost or saved, it doesn't matter. He's just a grief. But he's a grief to God. His ways are always grievous. God is always grieved by him. thy judgments are far above out of his sight, God's judgments. They're far above out of his sight. You know the passage. Look in Isaiah 55. Isaiah 55. Smart men naturally think that because they think thoughts that are, you know, and to them high, that nobody could think differently than them. And God does every time. And not only is that, not only does he think differently, he thinks higher than they think. Verse 8, "For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, saith the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts." And so the psalmist says, thy judgments, God's judgments, are far above out of his, the wicked, sight. Thy judgments are far above out of his sight. He doesn't understand, doesn't get it. And we were dealing with it some on Sunday school and Sunday morning. We didn't get all the way through it yet. But the idea that men say things sometimes they don't even know what they're saying. And God holds them to it. And sometimes a lost guy has been known to say something that was true, but it wasn't true the way the guy was thinking about it. That's because God's ways and thoughts are higher than ours. His thoughts are far above anything that man thinks. So an education means nothing. Horse sense means nothing if you're not saved. And if you are saved, there's an awful lot that won't make any sense at all unless you're reading the Bible and unless you can find a place of humility where you're willing to deal with your sins and realize and start over from the very base and realize that you're stupid and that you're proud and that you're wicked and that you're vile. And so let's start on the foundation of Jesus Christ and start at the very first course of block and lay a course of knowledge that you can start building on. And so that's what 1 Corinthians chapter 3 says. A building thereupon, you have the foundation, Jesus Christ. Other foundation can no man lay, but that is laid, which is Christ. And then every man is supposed to build thereupon. That's what that wood, hay, and stubble and fire is all about. And part of that entire context is knowledge. The idea of precepts, the idea of knowledge. The natural man receiveth not the things of the Spirit of God, from the passage before. And so a guy has to come to a place where he allows God to teach him what? Precept upon precept, line upon line, here a little, there a little. And until, you know, if he refuses to allow God to teach him something, and that's where I was when the Lord, when I rediscovered the Lord, if that's the right term, at 22 years old, is a Christian, but having never been taught anything, no answers, groping around in the blackness of busting my shins and falling and busting my head everywhere I turned. Nothing that I did was right. Nothing that I thought was right. Nothing made me happy. And I found the knowledge of God was the key. So, and it's not about intelligence. Anyway, back to verse 5. His ways are always grievous. That is Psalms 10:5. His ways are always grievous. Thy judgments are far above out of his sight. As for all his enemies, he puffeth at them. A proud, haughty man. What's puffing? Hey, one day you're going to die. Puffing, right? Puffing. Yeah. Hey, someday you're going to come to judgment. It's puffing. It's what it is. It's in the Hebrew. Just go get an education and find out. No, that's what that is. It says in verse 5, "As for all his enemies, he puffeth at them." He doesn't take them serious. All the enemies that matter, he doesn't take seriously. Sin, death, hell, judgment, God, Jesus. If you're not saved, all those are your enemies, right? And you start talking like that, and a college kid every time will pfft, like that. Roll his eyes, do that slow roll. You know, what a moron. I have to walk past this moron on the sidewalk. You know, it's that. He puffs at him. verse 6, he hath said in his heart, I shall not be moved, for I shall never be in adversity. We're cocky, aren't we? Left to ourselves in a backslidden state. You think that you're in control, and once you get out from under mom and dad's tutelage and break their bands, and you have a little money and you have a job, you got a college education, you're ready to go take the world on. The world is your apple. It's going to kick your tail in, is what it's going to do. Because it just never happens that way. It says, he hath said in his heart, I shall not be moved, for I shall never be in adversity. It's amazing how many people think there are things that will never come upon them. I mean, even death. I mean, who at 20 years old in general, of the generation that I grew up with, living like the devil, running up and down the roads with moonshine and booze and stuff, thought that they were going to die, you know, one of those nights. None of us did. None of us did. But a bunch of them do. You're just not set. You will be in adversity one day, no matter what you say. Look in the Bible in Isaiah 47. Isaiah 47. Isaiah 47:8. It's amazing how sinners brag sometimes and what people say and leave on a record. But 47:8. Now this is Babylon, and the Lord is judging her and is telling her what's going to happen. And notice what she says, for thou hast, in verse 8. Therefore hear now this, thou that art given to pleasures, that dwellest carelessly, that sayest in thine heart, I am and none else beside me. See that pride? I shall not sit as a widow, neither shall I know the loss of children. I mean, now what mother, what wife with any sense would say that, right? Except she does. She says, I'll never be a widow and I'll never lose my children. So verse 9, but these two things shall come to thee in a moment, in one day, the loss of children and widowhood. They shall come upon thee in their perfection, for the multitude of thy sorceries and for the great abundance of thine enchantments. It's the judgment of God in this case. Look in Proverbs 30. Look in Proverbs 30. Sinners are very braggadocious. I don't have a better word at the moment. They just shoot their mouths off all the time. Proverbs 30. Make all kinds of claims. Muhammad Ali did. Look how he wound up. He was the big blabbermouth of my generation. Get on the news with Howard Cosell and just shoot his mouth off. I always hated him. I never did like him because he just shot his mouth off all the time. And so he winds up a guy that can't even lift a spoon to his mouth. And shot his mouth off so often that the Lord finally judged him. See, oh no, that was the blows he took to the head. Yeah, the Lord's blows. Anyway, Proverbs 30 and verse 20. Such is the way of an adulterous woman. She eateth, wipeth her mouth, and saith, I have done no wickedness. There she is. You have politicians in Washington that play that game every day. It's on open display. I mean, there are some people. I mean, I don't want to get anybody going here. I don't want to get going on it, to be honest with you. But there are some people that are full of audacity to think they can put across on an entire country, and maybe they have success in general, you know, that, look, I know they're crooks. I listened to what they said in the last election and then in this election, and they lied. They're crooks. They think they can get away with anything. And frankly, they kind of have. But it's they think that they're not accountable. They think they won't be held responsible. And they will. So we go back to Psalms 10 and verse 6. He has said in his heart, I shall not be moved. Imagine saying that. I mean, Job a righteous man, a just man, a righteous man, one that feared God escheweth evil, said, that which I feared came upon me. I mean, Job feared what came upon him, and it did happen. Here are people saying, oh no, that'll never happen to me. You are a moron. Verse 6. For I shall never be in adversity. His mouth is full of cursing and deceit and fraud. Sounds like some other folks that I know, right? You ever listen to the news? My goodness. Cursing, deceit, and fraud. Under his tongue is mischief and vanity. You know, mischief doesn't sound too bad. After all, Dennis the Menace was mischievous. It's kind of an innocent kid thing, you know, in our minds. It's just goes to show you how our minds tend to turn something from the Bible into something else. Mischief turns up 49 times in the Bible. The first six times it shows up, it's death and murder. The next time it shows up, it's idols. The time after that, it's God's judgments, which include famine, heat, blasts, beasts, and serpents. Haman sought to do the Jews mischief. He wanted to murder them all. It was genocide. Mischief is not just a little kid dipping his girlfriend's pigtails in the inkwell. It's much more than that. It's wickedness. Let me take you to the only New Testament mention of the word mischief. Look in Acts chapter 13. Acts 13. Acts chapter 13. Paul dealing with Elymas the sorcerer. Verse 8. But Elymas the sorcerer, for so is his name by interpretation, withstood them, seeking to turn away the deputy from the faith. That's Sergius Paulus. Guy wanting to get saved, wanting to hear the gospel. And this guy is setting his heart, his buddy, to try to thwart him so he doesn't get saved. Verse 9, then Paul, Saul, who also is called Paul, filled with the Holy Ghost, set his eyes on him and said, O full of all subtlety and mischief, thou child of the devil. Doesn't sound like a light little sin to me. Thou enemy of all righteousness, wilt thou not cease to pervert the right ways of the Lord? The guy walked away that day blind as a bat from the Lord's curse. He committed mischief. I have one last thing to show you about mischief. We'll go on. Look in Micah. Book of Micah. Chapter 7. Phew, there it is. Always relieved when I find a minor prophet. Still there, yes. Micah chapter 7. Micah 7, and notice verse 2. The good man is perished out of the earth. There is none upright among men. They lie, all lie in wait for blood. They hunt every man his brother with a net, that they may do evil with both hands earnestly. The prince asketh, and the judge asketh for a reward. And the great man, he uttereth his mischievous desire, so they wrap it up. Sounds like what's going on Capitol Hill. I mean, the prince, the judge, the great man, he uttereth his mischievous desire, and so they wrap it up. Verse 4, the best of them is as a briar. The most upright is sharper than a thorn, a hedge. The day of thy watchman and thy visitation cometh, now shall be their perplexity. But mischief is not a good context, ever. And it's not just Dennis the Menace and his bubble gum, okay? It's a lot more than that. Anyway, Psalms. Psalms chapter 10 and verse 7. His mouth is full of cursing and deceit and fraud. Is under his tongue. Under his tongue is mischief, rather, and vanity. He sitteth in the lurking places, lurking is also something that's not good. Five separate times somebody lurks, like a lion or like the devil, but they're lurking places. They're waiting to pounce on somebody. They're going to ambush somebody. He sitteth in the lurking places of the villages. In the secret places doth he murder the innocent. His eyes are privily set against the poor. Now don't forget, we're talking in part here about the devil. We're not just talking about lost men. We're not just talking about the crime in cities. We're talking about what the devil does. He was a murderer from the beginning, right? I mean, you talk about somebody that lurks around like a skank and tries to get somebody in hell at every turn. It's the devil. It's a lurking place. The world is a lurking place. Verse 9, he lieth in wait secretly as a lion in his den. Reminds you of 1 Peter 5:8, right? He lieth in wait to catch the poor. Again, the poor. The poor in verse 8. The poor twice in verse 9. The poor in verse 10. The poor, the poor, the poor. It projects you forward once again into the Great Tribulation, where somebody that has money that can buy and sell has taken the mark of the beast. It's prophetically projecting you to there. That does happen with the poor. Verse 9, he lieth in wait secretly as a lion in his den. He lieth in wait to catch the poor. He doth catch the poor when he draweth him into his net. There's some sort of an allure. There's some sort of seduction where he catches them by luring them in. It's bait. There's bait usually. And he draws them in and catches them. And that's what sin does, right? I mean, we've all gone after something at one point or another. And you got caught in somebody's net. You were the poor, and you were a sucker. Verse 10, he croucheth. And notice, very important, he humbleth himself. Now, this is the wicked. He humbleth himself. Some of those godly attributes can be faked and counterfeited. And so here you have somebody that humbles himself. You ever see the Pope? I don't know much about this last one, but Pope John Paul? Oh, he was the most humble-looking fellow you ever saw in your life. Walked with his arms up his sleeves all the time and, you know, kind of stooped over. You notice how they all stoop over? They don't walk like this. They stoop. Because they're humble. Because they're meek and lowly, like the lowly Nazarene. It's an impression. They're faking it. They're frauds. Look in, there's other things like this. We just saw one, I think, earlier. Look in Proverbs 18. But I got thinking about this verse and got thinking about how these attributes can be faked and are. You were warned about it. Proverbs 18. The wicked, he humbleth himself. He knows what that is. Look in Proverbs 18:1. Through desire, a man having separated himself, that's separation. So a monk separates himself. A monk gets off in an enclave, not a nunnery, a monastery. Well, they get in the nunnery too, but never mind. Anyway, but they separate themselves and get off, and there they are hatch their mischief. Says that through desire, a man having separated himself seeketh and intermeddleth with all wisdom. The world has its own standards of separation. And sometimes it's to colleges and universities where you're taken away from your parents and you paid good money for it, by the way, and proceed to undermine the thoughts of the entire next generation. But that's separation. Separation is usually a good thing, but not in this case, right? You're never called to be separate to all wisdom, only to God's wisdom, right? Let me see if I can find another verse for you here. Look in 2 Corinthians chapter 11. 2 Corinthians chapter 11. He humbleth himself. He separates himself. 2 Corinthians chapter 11. Verse 13. For such are false apostles, deceitful workers transforming themselves into the apostles of Christ. They're pretenders. But there's some pretentious humility going on there. I bet there's some separation going on there. Verse 14, and no marvel, for Satan himself is transformed into an angel of light. Therefore it is no great thing for his ministers also to be transformed as the ministers of righteousness. So there's a pretense of righteousness. There's a pretense of illumination. I don't know. I wouldn't encourage you to. I imagine most folks do get on the internet some and, you know, wade through some of the nonsense as far as the doctrinal stuff you can get into on the internet. But it's always stricken me that, you know, I get on a site, a Bible believing site, where somebody really does believe the Bible has things right? And then you get off into another site that you're not sure about yet. There's a spirit that comes off that. There's a spirit on that site that's a different kind of light than I get from somewhere where somebody's rightly divided the Bible and believes the book. I mean, there's a spirit about, there's a strange light that emanates off of a Calvinistic type setup. I mean, where somebody is utterly, completely non-dispensational, there's an entirely different aura of light to me that comes off of it. It's a spiritual discernment thing, I suppose, but you just got to be careful, because they're going to pretend to be righteous. You never met a more sanctimonious person in your life than a Calvinist. Some of you didn't even blink. Maybe you're not convinced. I've got a book at home, and I mean, you talk about it, just drips sanctimony. And we're all heretics because we believe that sinners can get saved. We actually think that sinners have the choice of being born again. What a joke. That's the attitude. It drips off of it. It's crazy. And it just it emanates off the page. It's just weird. Anyway, there's a different kind of light. So there's a humility. There's a pretense of righteousness. There's a pretense of separation. And mainly there's a pretense in being smooth and slick. Look, if you will, in Psalm 55. Psalm 55, go down to verse 21. Mainly they're super nice and tolerant. The words of his mouth were smoother than butter, but war was in his heart. His words were softer than oil, yet they were drawn swords. Proverbs 5. We could spend all night going over men's pretentious words. Proverbs 5:3, for the lips of a strange woman drop as a honeycomb, and her mouth is smoother than oil. Look at one more place, then we'll shut down for the evening. Isaiah 30. Isaiah chapter 30, go down to verse 10. Let's start with verse 9. That this is a rebellious people, talking about Israel, lying children, children that will not hear the law of the Lord, which say to the seers, see not, to the prophets, prophesy not, unto us right things, speak unto us smooth things. Prophesy deceit. Sounds like it's more than Israel, doesn't it? But it's a pretentious, righteous, sanctimonious, separated, godly, tearful humility. It's all pretended. It's all pretense. Questions or comments? All right, let's take the